good. Good morning. Hey, first of all, do you have chumashim? Are there? And there were source sheets as well. What? There's more here?
Yes. Anyone needs?
Hey, this morning, first of all, I must apologize in advance because this week I have to run out as soon as the shiur is over. So you'll forgive me if I cannot stay to answer any questions or comments. Second, just a. Did anybody by some chance record the first shiur? Anybody? Nope? Yes. Well, it's somewhere out there in the ether, but it's not here. Okay. Now, this week we are going to look at the third of our. Am I supposed to press something? Oh, yours. So what do I press? The red button. Now, I won't be starting an alarm or anything? This one's recording already. Oh, the red button. Oh, here we go. Okay, the red button. This week, we're going to be examining the third of our biblical villains, Korach. Korach is the symbol of an aspect of Jewish life so common that it serves as a cruel caricature of Klal Yisrael. And the fodder for many painful and embarrassing jokes. And that, of course, is the issue of machlokas. The Talmud in Maseches Gittin, which is source number one, teaches that political infighting destroyed Jerusalem. It tells the sad tale of Hanu Biryone, the zealots, who were one of the political parties when Jerusalem was under siege by the Roman armies. Omrule Rabbono Nepuk Venavid Shlomo Bahadayu. The rabbinical party wished to sue for peace. Lo Shavkinu, the Biryone, the zealots, would not permit it. Omru luhu nepuk v'navid krova behadayu. Well, they said instead, the zealots said, let us go and attack, make war. Omru luhu rabbonon lo mistayo milsa. The rabbonon argued, you won't be successful. So what did the zealots do in order to force the issue? Kal nohu lahanu amavre dechite v'sara. They burned down all the storehouses of grain. V'havakafna, and there was famine in the city. And as a consequence, the Beis HaMikdosh was lost to this terrible machlokas. Machlokas has thrived as the daily fare of contemporary community relationships, whether in schools, yeshivos, government, machlokas is a tragic fixture of Jewish life that no amount of jokes can soften. Think about how much energy, creativity, money, talent have been squandered. How many shining institutions and promising careers have been ravaged? How many communities have been torn asunder through poisonous politics and self-righteous crusades? The damage caused by machlokas is incalculable, even victimizing the innocent, if you turn to page 826. Surely we'll read the English on 827. Verse 27. Actually, it starts on it starts at the bottom of 825, verse 27. During the incident with Korach, the Torah tells us, so they got themselves up from near the dwelling of Korach, Dothan, and Aviram, from all around. Dothan and Aviram went out erect at the entrance of their tents with their wives, children, and infants. And Rashi comments on the facing page, 826, the Rashi that begins with the words, with the word Unishehem, Uvinehem Vitapam. It's on the right column of the Rashi, the second line. Borei Kamokoshe Hamachlokas. See how devastating is Machlokas. Shahre Bezdin Shalmata in Onshin Elad Sheyovishte Soros. The earthly court cannot punish until a person achieves their physical majority. Ubezdin shalmalo ad esrim shana, and the heavenly court until 20 years. Vikan ovdu af yonke shodayim. Okay, I did nothing, and the recorder stopped. Not yours, the other one. It sounds to me as if the battery died. Now, that's something that would happen to me constantly. I mean, every time I have a camera for a big event, battery is dead. Looks like the battery is dead, yeah. Okay. At least there's a different recording. But here, the kan ovdu afyon keshadayim. Here, as a result of the machlokas of Korach, even infants were swallowed by the earth. Machlokas has thrived, and it is for these reasons that the actual mitzvah that forbids involvement in machlokas is traced by the Talmud in Sanhedrin, source number 2, to the parsha of Korach. The pasuk tells us, "Vayokam Moshe vayelech el Dothan va'aviram." Moshe, if you will, swallowed his pride. He went to Dothan va'aviram in order to attempt a reconciliation. Amar Eish Lakish mikan she'ein machzikin b'machlokas. We learn from Moshe Rabbeinu that one should never hold on to a machlokas. The Amar Rav kol machzik b'machlokas over b'lav. One who does so has violated a mitzvah she'ne'emar v'lo yiyek korach ucha adaso. It's actually a mitzvah in the Torah not to be like Korach and his company. Now the Mishnah, source number 3, in Maseches Avos, a well-known Mishnah, identifies Korach as the archetype of the Baal Machlokas and his dispute with Moshe as the prototype of Machlokas itself. The Mishnah says, Kol Machlokas shi l'shem shamayim, any Machlokas that is for the sake of heaven, sofo l'hiskayim, will ultimately have kiyum. It will have lasting value. V'she'eino l'shem shamayim, but if it is not for the sake of heaven, ein sofo l'hiskayim, it will not have lasting value. Ezoi machlokes shi l'shem shamayim. How do we define a machlokes that is for the sake of heaven. Zumachlokas Hillel v'Shamay. Hillel and Shammai, zumachlokas for the sake of heaven. V'she'eno l'shem Shamayim, zumachlokas Korach v'chol Adasa. So apparently then, machlokas is not all bad. And the Mishnah itself asks the crucial question. How are we to identify a machlokas l'shem Shamayim, that is for the sake of heaven, versus a machlokas that is not for the sake of heaven? This is the most urgent and relevant question. And we need to answer it if we are to properly evaluate the pressing realities of Jewish community life. But then, the Mishnah leaves us completely in the dark. What is it about these models of machlokas? Korach and his cohort on the one hand, Hillel and Shammai on the other hand. What is it about this machlokas or these machlokas that is applicable elsewhere? A model must teach a standard that we can apply to other situations. What is the standard that this Mishnah teaches by which we can evaluate future machlokas? The Mishnah seems to identify endurance as the standard, a machlokas that endures. The word of the Mishnah was that it is miskayem, it endures, is constructive. And a machlokas that does not endure is destructive. Now, it's obvious that that's not very helpful. Because perhaps a century from now, we could see the endurance of a machlokas in retrospect, and then we would know. But what does the Mishnah teach that would enable us to assess today what is worth quarreling about, with whom it is worth quarreling, and in what circumstances to quarrel? Surely there was nothing about Korach that shouted, attention, not for the sake of heaven. Nothing at all. The people involved with Korach were men of fame, anshei shem, well known for their piety and wisdom. Take a look at page 820, 821 in the English. Verse 2. They stood before Moshe with 250 men from the children of Israel, leaders of the assembly, those summoned for meeting, men of renown. They were so convinced that their machlokas was for the sake of heaven that they were literally willing to stake their lives on it. Again, take a look at page 824, 825 in the English, verses 16 through 18. Moshe said to Korach, you and your entire assembly, be before Hashem, you, they, and Aaron tomorrow. Let each man take his fire pan, and you shall place incense on them, and you shall bring before Hashem, each man with his fire pan, 250 fire pans, and you and Aaron, each man with his fire pan. So they took each man his fire pan, and they placed fire on them, and put incense on them, and they stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moshe and Aaron. Now, it was known to everyone from the tragic experience of Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, what fate befell those who offered an alien fire before God. They were killed instantly. And yet these people, Korach and his 250 followers, they were willing to put their lives on the line. They were willing to offer the alien fire. Would any of us have been sure, had we been alive at the time, that Korach was not arguing for the sake of heaven. In fact, those who were living at the time, despite witnessing the miraculous devastation inflicted on the group of dissidents, still believed, continued to believe, that these dissidents were committed and devout individuals who at worst had made a mistake for the sake of heaven. They blamed Moshe and Aaron for overreacting. Page 828, 829 in the English, verse 6. The entire assembly of the children of Israel complained on the morrow, the day after Korach and his assembly had been swallowed, against Moshe and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of Hashem." What then is the point of a Mishnah that cannot inform the onlookers or even help the disputants themselves? After all, has there ever been a machlokas in which both sides were not completely convinced that they were acting for the sake of heaven? Another troubling point about this Mishnah is that it seems to compare apples to oranges. Korach argued with Moshe over political issues and personal standing. In such an argument, motives make all the difference in the world. Hillel and Shammai argued about subtle points of Torah law, questions of truth without personal bearing. In such arguments, motive is not relevant. Does the Mishnah mean to simplistically imply that any machlokas about Torah law is for the sake of heaven, and any argument involving politics is not for the sake of heaven? That simply is not true. It's not true experientially. It's not true historically. Consider, for example, the famous story found in Maseches Brachos, which I didn't bring to you because it's a very long story. But we're all familiar with at least the aftermath of that story when Rebbe Lozer ben Azariah, at 18 years old, assumes the position of the presidency of the Sanhedrin because of a terrible machlokas that occurred between Rebbe Gamliel and Rebbe Yoshua. And that was a machlokas in Torah that was stained by personal involvement. It's not true halachically, this distinction between Torah and politics. After all, there are arguments about Torah law itself that are a capital offense. If you take a look on page 1026, in the English, verses 8 and on, you'll see, we don't need to really read through the verses, but this is the section about, you see on the side, the rebellious elder, the Zaken Mamre. This is a halachic dispute, and we are prepared to put this rebellious elder to death under certain circumstances. In fact, the Mishnah implies just the opposite, that the issues involved in machlokas are the same, whether the quarrel is over absolute Torah or personal politics. Now, to answer these vitally important questions, let's trace the roots of machlokas, because they run very deep, drawing from the same complex maze of creative and destructive energies. The Midrash in source number 4 in Bereishis Rabbah. Let's first take a look. I have you flipping around so much, but page 4, right at the beginning. Five in the English at the top. On the second day of creation, God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters and let it separate between water and water. This is machlokas, to be mavdil, to separate, to be cholek, synonym, between water and water, the upper waters and the lower waters. So, continues in verse 7, God made the firmament and separated between the waters which were beneath the firmament and the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. God called the firmament heaven, and there was evening and there was morning, a second day. And the Midrash in source 4 comments. Loma, a very famous comment. Loma ein ksiv basheni ki tov. Why are the words, it was good, ki tov, ayar elukim, etc., ki tov, he saw that it was good. Why do those words not appear on the second day of creation? Rabbi Chanina omer shabo nivres machlokas. Because machlokas was created on that day. And this is a machlokas that is quite literally l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. Literally. Shenemar, vayihi mavdil bein mayim lamayim. Omer av tavyumi, im machlokes shehi l'tikuno shel olam u'l'yishuvo, ein bo ki tov. If a machlokes that was done for the betterment of the world, for its tikkun, it doesn't say kitov. Machlokes ili irbuvosh alachas kama v'kama. A machlokes that is designed to confuse the world, disrupt the world. How much more so can we not apply the words kitov to such a machlokes? Now, all machlokes is an outgrowth of this division described on day 2. A division, as I said a moment ago, that was made literally l'shem shamayim. Whether it involves the personal ambition of a Korach or the search for truth of a Hillel, machlokas is motivated by the same forces released during creation. Source number 5, the Zohar comments. Vayomer Elokim yehi rakia b'sochamayim, and God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, uva'ahu machlokas istakaf isha derugza. In that machlokas, the fire of anger, of rogas, raged powerfully. V'nofik minei ahu machlokas gehenom. And the result, the outcome of that machlokas is gehenom itself. Korach. This is the nature of the machlokas of Korach. Began to lohava l'shem shamayim, because it was not, as the Mishnah said, l'shem shamayim. Machlokas di istakan kegavna di le'ela. However, a machlokas that has higher motives, v'solik v'lo nochis, it rises up, does not come down. V'iskayim ba'orach mishor, and it endures justly, do machlokas de shamay v'hillel. That is the machlokas of Shammai and Hillel, v'kutcha brichu, afrish beinayu, God has separated between them, v'askim lon v'do hava machlokas l'shem shamayim. This is the machlokas l'shem shamayim. Now, there's a double surprise that emerges from this Zohar. First, it means that even an ambitious Korach in search of political power draws from a pool of truth, the primal roots of Havdalah on the second day, in common with Hillel and Shammai. Second, it implies the exact opposite, that Hillel and Shammai, in their search for truth, draw from a pool of fundamental drives in common with Korach. And this is precisely the bombshell of the odd juxtaposition by the Mishnah in Avos. Being right is not what counts, and correctness does not determine whether an argument will endure. The sole and solitary factor to consider is the nature of the machlokas itself. If it is for the sake of heaven, you win. You both win. If not, you lose, even if you were right. So, everyone who sits around earnestly arguing the points of the dispute, trying to discover truth and reality, are just wasting their time. There is only one meaningful question to consider, and it is the one everyone is ignoring. That question is, just what type of machlokas is this anyway? So, I can understand why motivation determines a person's suitability for political position, and why not for the sake of heaven means you lose, Korach. But why would a Torah of divine truth be affected by motivation? If Hillel or Shammai were motivated not for the sake of heaven, surely that would in no way affect the truth of their argument. Yet, the Talmud in Maseches Eruvin, source 6, teaches that it is precisely the nature of the machlokas per se that decides who the halacha follows. The Talmud here tells us, Yotza baskol v'omra, voice emanated from heaven and declared the famous words, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim he. Both the words of Hillel and the words of Shammai are the words of the living God. The halacha kibeis Hillel, but the halacha follows beis Hillel. To which the Talmud asks, if they are both the words of the living God, why did Beis Hillel merit that the halacha follows them? Mipnei, and here the Gemara gives an astonishing answer, Mipnei shenochin, they were accepting, va'aluvim, and they were tolerant. Vishonim divrehem vidivrei beishamai. When they taught, they always taught their opinion and the opinion of beishamai. Viloode, and not only that, elishamagdimin divrei beishamai lidivrehem. They gave precedence to the words of beishamai over their own words. Now, fine. Agreed. Hillel and his followers were peace-loving people who argued honorably. For this, they deserve everlasting esteem and respect. But why should this determine the halacha? What does being peace-loving have to do with taking the position that is true? Not only that, but the Talmud in Maseches Yevamos, source 7, states clearly that Beis Shammai were smarter and sharper. Beis Shammai mechadidi tvei, the Gemara says. Beis Shammai were smarter, sharper people. And there are numerous examples in the Talmud where Beis Shammai defeat Beis Hillel's conclusions convincingly. Again, I didn't bring you a source, but Chagiga, Daf Chav Beis Amud Beis, there is a powerful example of this. They absolutely make shreds of Beis Hillel's argument. So why allow peace to influence truth? Well, the Talmud, again in Yevamos, source 8, provides the key. Afal pi shenechluku Beis Shammai uBeis Hillel b'tzoros uba'achoyos b'get yoshon ubesofek eishes ish uvemegareish es ishto velono imo bepundak bekesef ubeshove kesef bepruto ubeshove pruto. Even though Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had numerous arguments, for example, in the domain of ishus, of marriage, numerous arguments. For example, the famous argument in the first Mishnah in Kiddushin: how much money do you have to give in order to be mekadesh, to become engaged to a woman through the means of kesef? So, One opinion is a pruta, and one opinion is kiyisra italki, a much larger sum than a pruta. Pruta is a minimum amount of value. Yisra italki, a more valuable coin. Now, this would mean that according to the opinion of Isra Italki, if you gave a pruta, you wouldn't be married. Now, that could cause some serious issues. And yet, in spite of this, the Gemara goes on to say in Source 8, Lo nimnu beis shamay mi lisa noshim mi beis hillel, velo beis hillel mi beis shamay. They always married each other's prospective kalos. Always. They trusted each other. L'lamdecha shechiba v'reyus noagim ze beze. To teach us that love and camaraderie and reyus, deep affection, prevailed between them. L'kaye mashenemar, to fulfill the verse in Zechariah, ha'emes v'hashalom ehov. Peace and truth. Truth and peace. Emes and shalom, you should love. Now, of course, you can just imagine this happening today, can't you? You'd have to fill out on your shidduch resume whether you're Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel. And then we'd know whether we could suggest a shidduch or not suggest a shidduch. There would certainly be none of this going on, and this is a serious matter. It's a serious observation. We know that we certainly do not practice this for much, 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 ever so much more trivial issues than this. Now this MS and Shalom, the truth and the peace, are related here not as some sentimental wish, but rather are an existential definition derived from the Havdalah of creation. Let me explain this. The primal division, we have to understand what Machlokas actually is, what Havdalah actually is. The primal division of creation's waters did not come to shatter, but to define. Machlokes is essentially a process of definition. In fact, the process of creation entails a vast sequence of definitions. These definitions provide separate being to details, to pratim, to details, whose existence was once included within the overarching klal, the overarching whole, the whole that was incorporative of everything, the whole that represented the potential of the universe. And with each act of creation, pratim, details, separate out in a process of definition so that they become clearly defined and separate. The Shamayim Va'oretz of the Torah's opening verse, again, if you're still on page 4, the Pasuk says opening verses, in verse 14, bottom of the page, page 5, bottom of the page. God said, let there be luminaries in the firmament of the heaven to separate between the day and the night, and they shall serve as signs and for festivals and for days and years. Now look back on page 4. The Rashi, Yehi Me'oros, and this is going to be in the left-hand column, three lines from the bottom. Uh, No, I'm sorry, it's the previous Yehima Oros, which is a few lines before that. Six lines. Six lines from the bottom of the left-hand column on page 4. Yehima Oros, Miyom Risho Nivru. Everything was created on day one. Everything. And Ubrevi Tziva Aleyem Lihitolos Birikia. It was on the fourth day that the heavenly bodies were placed into the Rakia, which had been created on day two. V'chein kol toldo shamayim v'oretz. This is true of everything. Nivru biyom rishon. V'chol echod ve'echod nikva biyom shenigzar olov. And every one of them was subsequently placed in its place in one of the latter days of creation. And this means everything was included in Yehi Or, in the light that was the creation of day one. Light includes all potential. And this potential was actualized step by step by step by step, separated out, muvdal, divided out with each subsequent day. God's love of life was the impetus for creation and is reflected and emulated in the drive of every one of us for ongoing definition throughout our lives. The lifelong enterprise of self-definition may be expressed in a multitude of ways. Torah discovery, scientific discovery, artistic or musical or literary expression, or a whole host of other expressions that are all paths through which individual human beings define themselves and continuously refine those definitions throughout their lives. Machlokes literally means differentiation and exists for the development and building of the world, as we saw earlier in Source 4, in the deepest way imaginable. It provides, Machlokes provides the place for each separate entity to exist fully itself, fully expressed, and fully unique. Through Machlokes, through the process of differentiation, each individual becomes incalculably valuable. Through Machlokes, each individual articulates yet another inimitable and endlessly exciting face of the whole of creation. The conscious pursuit of definition expresses the desire to further consummate creation. This is the ultimate l'shem shamayim, the ultimate for the sake of heaven. But there is a volatile danger in machlokes as well. The process of machlokes in creation, as we have seen, is called havdalah several times throughout the first chapter of Bereishis. It is referred to in Pasuk Dalet, Vav, Zayin, Yud Dalet, Yud Ches. It's referred to as Havdalah. The word Havdalah has two very different meanings that are nonetheless closely related. To divide is to apportion. And to divide is to split apart. You can divide an inheritance, or you can split apart as a result of an inheritance. Both meanings come from the deeper sense of divide as definition and classification. This means that when something that began as definition and thus provided for individual and unique existence becomes instead a cleavage, a shattering of wholeness, it courts death and defines itself straight out of existence. The need for definition that legitimately drives all discovery, including self-discovery, may go one step beyond to separation and alienation. Uniqueness may become exclusivity, and self-definition may lead to detachment. Emes v'shalom. Shalom is the Hebrew word for whole. And according to the Talmud, is another name for God himself. If you look in Source 9. Osur lo'odom sheyitein shalom lechaveiro b'veis hamerchas. You're not allowed to say shalom aleichem to someone in the bathroom. Mishum she'ne'emar vayikrolo Hashem shalom. God's name, another one of God's names is shalom, so we don't use it. We don't invoke it in the bathroom. This is so because it is only in the fullness of all creation, all of creation, that God is expressed. As the heavenly voice announced regarding the opinions of Hillel and Shammai, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. These and those, are the words of the living God. Consider the child of parents who are divorcing, God forbid, and ask him or her with whom they want to live, with whom they will have truth in their life. And the child's heart shouts that there is only one reality, that there can be no truth without them both. I need them both. Ask Hillel, with whom do you want to live? Hillel will say, to me there is but one reality. There is no truth without Shammai. And if I have found my path and myself in life, it is only because this is a world that includes Shammai. Only through the finely honed distinction from Shammai's approach, the scalpel-like definitions that exist between Hillel and Shammai, traced step by step back to the most fundamental differences in assumptions, can Hillel's understanding exist. The relationship between the colleagues of such a pair of mirror egos is unique. That's why the Talmud refers to them, these pairs. Each one is the bar plugta of the other. Bar plugta. Think about those words. It literally means the argument's child. The bar plugta. They are the child of the argument, engaged in mutual dialectic. They cannot live without each other. Literally. One of the most famous stories in the Talmud, the tragedy of the famous Bar Plugta pair, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. It's the most poignant example of this kind of relationship. Reish Lakish literally died because of Rav Yochanan's prayers in the course of a bruising machlokes between them. And here is the epilogue to the story in the Talmud in Bava Metzia. Take a look at Source 10. Noch nafshei du Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, v'hava komitztaya Rabbi Yochanan Basrei. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish died, and Rabbi Yochanan was so distressed, inconsolably distressed. Omru Rabbonon, man leizel leisvei ledaite. Who should we send to bring some calm to Rabbi Yochanan? Nezel Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos, the Mechadidin Shmaita say, let's send Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos. He's real smart. Ozal Yosef Kameh. So Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos took the place of Reish Lakish. He sat before Rabbi Yochanan. Kol milsa dahava omar Rabbi Yochanan omar le tanya de misayelach. Whatever Rabbi Yochanan said, Rabbi Lazar ben Pedas immediately provided a support for what Rabbi Yochanan said from a brisa, from a mishnah. Omar, Rabbi Yochanan said, at kebar lakisha, you're the guy they send me to take the place of Reish Lakish. Bar lakisha ke hava amina milsa hava makshali estrin va'arba kushiyasa. Whenever I said one thing, Reish Lakish would ask me 24 questions. Umafrikno le estrin va'arba piruke, and I was compelled to delve so much more deeply into the sugya and provide him with 24 answers. Umemela revocha shmaitasa, and thus the Torah expanded and expanded and expanded. Va'at amre tanya de mesaye aloch, and you're bringing me supports for what I say? Otulo yodano de shapir kamina? You think I don't know that what I said was good? I need you to support me? Hava ko'ozil v'kokora man. Rabbi Yochanan started to walk around tearing his clothing. The kabochi, and he was crying. The Omar, Heicha at bar lakisha, Heicha at bar lakisha. Where are you, Reish Lakish? The havakot savach ad the shof daite mine. And he was screaming. He was hysterical until he literally lost his mind. Bo rabbonon rachme alei v'noch nafshe. The rabbonon were mispalil, and Rabbi Yochanan died. Rav Yochanan was driven mad by the loss of his bar plugta. He could no longer define his truth or his self or ultimately his very mind without Reish Lakish. Similarly, Hillel can no more express his opinion without mentioning Shammai's than the desolate child can imagine a world shattered and separated by the final division of divorce. Korach, on the other hand, did not come to define, but to separate. This is the whole point of the strangely ambiguous words that open his parsha. Page 820. Strange words. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohos ben Levi. The English, Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Korach, son of Levi, Vayikach. Well, it literally means he took himself. The Art Scroll bases its translation on Rashi. Rashi says, if you look at the opening Rashi of the Parsha on the facing page, Rashi says, Vayikach Korach. This is actually the second Rashi. Lokach es atzmo litzad echod, lios nechlak mitocha eda l'orer al hakehuna. Vezehu shetirgeim unkelus. This is the meaning of the Targum Unkelus. Vayikach Korach. You see, it's a very strange expression. It doesn't say what he took. What do you mean, Vayikach? What did he take? Like another parsha we have at the end of the Torah, Vayelech Moshe. Moshe went. Where did he go? Doesn't say where he went. Vayikach Korach. What did he take? Took himself. Took himself to one side. He initiated a machlokas. La'orer ala kahuna. Vizeu shetirge munkulis. This is why the Targum Unkelus translates this word, as does the Art Scroll. V'ispalag. He made peleg. Separation. Machlokas. Nechlak mishar ha'eda lahachzik b'machlokas. Instead of finding his unique self to be an expression of the universe, Korach found the universe to be an expression of himself. The rest of the universe meant nothing to him. He had boiled creation down to one infinitesimal detail called Korach. By doing this, Korach became the enemy of creation and the ultimate, not for the sake of heaven, imaginable. Separation leads to the hell, the Gehenna of alienation. And alienation is the only honest-to-goodness hell that there is. Therefore, Korach's company was swallowed alive with everything they had. Therefore, even infants died, not as punishment, but as bystanders at the mouth of the abyss opened by Machlokas, just as so many are swallowed till this very day by that same gaping hole. To escape Machlokas, it is essential to rededicate oneself to the primal Havdalah of creation, to true division, crushing anything that repudiates true peace. Therefore, the Jewish people were exhorted. This is a beautiful pasuk on page 824. We'll see the Hebrew first. Verse 21. What are they told? Vayadaber Hashem el Moshe v'al Aaron lemor, he bodlu mitoch ha'edah hazos. Make a havdalah. That primal word of creation. Make a havdalah between yourselves and this Eda, this congregation of Korach. How ironic that the archetype of Machlokas, the enemy of wholeness, desires the kahuna, the agency of the Birchas Kohanim, who bless Klal Yisrael with nothing other than shalom. How fitting that the archetype of Machlokas chooses as his victim the archetype of peace, Aaron HaKohen, whose Torah was truth and peace, which we read actually in the Haftorah here. If you look on page 1138, the Haftorah of Toldos, the pasuk says in Malachi chapter 2, verse 6 and 7, end of the, describing the Kohen. It says in, we'll read the Hebrew here, Pasuk Vav, Toras emes oiso befihu, v'avlo lo nimtso bisfasov. The teaching of truth was in his mouth and no injustice was found on his lips. Bisholom uv'mishor halach iti, v'rabim heshiv me'avon. He walked with me in peace and fairness, and he turned many away from sin. Ki sifsei kohen yishmeru das, v'torah yivakshu mipiu, ki malach Hashem tzivokosu. For the lips of a kohen should safeguard knowledge, and they should seek teaching from his mouth, for he is an agent of Hashem, a malach Hashem, master of legions. So far, so good. But we're still left with a loose end. How can we know when we are dealing with a Korach and when we are dealing with a Shammai? How are we supposed to know? In setting up Korach as an archetype, the Mishnah seems to offer us no guidance, because there is nothing about Korach, as we said earlier, objectively identifying him as Mr. Not for the sake of heaven. If anything, the egalitarian Korach, the man who declared Kulam Kidoshim, all the Jewish people are holy, appears to be not separating himself as he, becomes the champion of the rights of every Jew to worship directly without a Kohen as an intermediary. If everyone is sanctified by Sinai, why must their relationship with God be hallowed by a kahuna, a priesthood? This is Korach's argument. Everyone heard God speak at Sinai. That's all that counts. Kulam kedoshim. There is no uniqueness. There are no distinctive relationships. There is no need for a kahuna. And with these words, Korach exposed himself and his hatred for the Havdalah of creation, whose entire purpose is distinctiveness, uniqueness, and detail. Moshe, who understood exactly what Korach was saying, heard Korach make the same cynical announcements heard so often in modern times from those who loathe freedom. Everyone is equal. And the individual, qua individual, the individual in the capacity of individual, counts for nothing. Which has always paradoxically meant one thing: I want it all. Moshe cuts directly to the heart of Korach's argument, speaking to him about why he never seems to have enough, and about Havdalah itself, and about how the kahuna was as real as creation. Page 822, 823 in the English, verse 5. Actually, verse 5 begins on 821 at the bottom. He spoke to Korach and to his entire assembly, saying, "In the morning Hashem will make known the one who is his own and the Holy One, and he will draw him close to himself, and whomever he will choose, he will draw close to himself." Rashi says on the word vihikriv, it's the top line of the Rashi on the right-hand column, but I want you to go down to the third line in the middle of the Rashi, Medrasho. The Medrash says on this, Boker, Omar lehem Moshe gvulos cholak HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo. God made boundaries in his world. Yicholim atem lahafoch boker laerev. Do you think you can turn around morning and make it evening, or vice versa? Kein tuchlu levat elezeh. You'll have the same success trying to eliminate this. Shenemar vayihi erev, vayihi voker, vayavdel. Kach, similarly, just as there was Havdalah in creation, vayavdel Aaron lahagdisho. God separated Aaron to sanctify him. What tipped Moshe off, exposing Korach's cynicism? One symptom was unmistakable. Korach's entire cohort was pledged to machlokes and opposed to resolution. They were impervious to debate, closed to any discussion or consideration of the issues, later refusing to even meet with Moshe. On this page, 822, 823 in the English, verse 12, we saw Moshe sent forth to summon Dothan and Aviram, the sons of Eliab, but they said, "We shall not go up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up from a land flowing with milk and honey to cause us to die in the wilderness?" Wow. Even in the age of Trump and CNN, you find this shocking. The land of Egypt, the land of milk and honey. Yet you seek to dominate us, even to dominate further, etc., etc. In classic machlokas attitude, they had made up their minds and were not going to let facts get in the way. Listen to this medrash to conclude. Source number 12. Vayomer Moshe el Korach. Va'omer lefonov dvorim rakim. He spoke gently. Kol hadvorim ha'elu pi'es Moshe l'Korach. Moshe attempted to appease Korach. Ve'einat motzei she'eshivo dovor. But Korach never said a word. L'fisha haya pikeach b'risho. He was very clever in his evil. Omar, yamani me'eshivo, if I answer him, yodeya ani boshu chocham godol. He's a really smart guy. Va'achshav yikapcheni b'dvorov. He'll win the argument. He wins every argument. Right? He wins every argument. Korach was a good Jewish husband. He wins every argument. Moshe. V'ani misratzelo bal korchi. I'm going to be forced to reconcile with him. Mutov shlo ezok eklo. Better I shouldn't start to talk to him at all. Kishero Moshe she'en bo toeles. Piresh heimenu. When Moshe saw there was nothing to be gained, that was the end. No more attempts at appeasement. So the Mishnah in Avos does teach a perfect way to expose the nature of a machlokas after all. We can know when it is for the sake of heaven and when it is not. And we learn it all from Korach, the archetype of the Baal machlokas. Is there a burning desire for wholeness? A need to understand the opinion of the other side? Is there a search for respect and peace? Is there sanctity for the individual and joy in uniqueness? If there is, you need not listen very carefully to the argument itself to know that in some sense it is truth. God himself has already acknowledged it. If, on the other hand, there is not, you needn't listen very carefully to the argument either. But you had better watch your step and move quickly away from the gateway to hell. On that note, have a wonderful a wonderful week. And Im Yirtzeh Hashem, I will see you next Sunday for the fourth and final lecture.